Thinking outside the cage. This is the Drive and Off-Road Friday on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
All through the weekend, it's sort of a best of what you hear here on the Eagle 93.9 during the week. Tomorrow afternoon at 2, the best of Neil Bortz. And then tomorrow at 5, it's Glenn Beck Weekend. You like their shows Monday through Friday? Check them out tomorrow on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. I'm Derek Gilbert, 520 in Mid-Missouri. With us now, a couple of people who, in my opinion, fit the definition of American heroes. First, we'd like to bring in a guest that you've heard here on the program several times before, the author of a very enlightening and disturbing book, Expendable Elite, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. Dan, welcome back to the Eagle 93.9.
It is a blessing to be on the Eagle.
And also with us is a person who's risked quite a lot to make some very dangerous connections regarding the events leading up to and since September 11th of 2001, Indira Singh. Indira, welcome to the Eagle 93.9.
Thank you, Derek. Thank you for having me, and hello to Dan.
And hello to you. You are one of those that I consider to be a woman of courage.
No, that's high praise coming from you.
Well, the purpose of the talk here, and we will take this all the way through to 7 o'clock Central Time, is to discuss some very disturbing parallels, some trends that we've seen in the United States government in the way it's prosecuted groups or nations that have been declared official enemies of the state. On the one hand, prosecuting war against these groups, in Dan's case, Vietnam, in the case of today, the global war on terror, while at the same time appearing to offer safe haven to the very enemies that we claim to be fighting. Dan, in your book, Expendable Elite, you go into great detail about your mission as the captain of an A-team, a Special Forces A-team, a Green Beret, on the border between Vietnam and Cambodia. What was your mission, Dan?
Well, on the day before Christmas of 1965, Colonel William Tuttle called me into his office in Can Tho, Vietnam. He commanded all Green Berets in the entire Delta area of Vietnam, and he'd asked me if I'd volunteer to take command of a independent operation. We would be the first ones to go into Cambodia, into the enemy safe havens. And we'd heard about these safe havens back at Fort Bragg, where the President of the United States, President Lyndon Baines Johnson, had personally authorized the enemy sanctuaries all along the Cambodian border. And in fact, in my book, I quote General Westmoreland as stating just very matter-of-factly that he was aware of them, but that he had been ordered not to tell Congress, and he'd been ordered not to tell the press. Now, what kind of a nation do we have that the commander-in-chief gives the enemy sanctuary and then the leaders of our military in the field allow that to happen? I mean, General Westmoreland was actually playing tennis every day in Saigon while our men were getting shot at from across the border and were not allowed to retaliate. And I think I told you about the one time that a captain did retaliate and what happened to him.
Court-martial?
Yes. He commanded the Special Forces A-team in a camp in Vinh Gia, Vietnam, right on the Cambodian border. There was an enemy battalion across the canal. They fired into his camp, killed five of his people. He fired back at them and ended up in Leavenworth Prison in about less than a week.
Hmm. Dan, how serious a tactical threat were the Viet Cong camps across the border in Cambodia to the security of South Vietnam?
Oh, a very heavy situation. In fact, I had the command of the first independent operation, so I was able to fire into Cambodia and drive them back about 3 kilometers from the border, which meant that with our female agents, and again, courageous women, they could never attack us in a surprise. I mean, they had 3 kilometers they had to cover, and we had that area covered with our female agents. But the problem is, just like Colonel Tuttle told me when I accepted the mission, he says, Dan, you got to realize that if you're caught inside of Cambodia, you get no air support, no artillery support, and no medevac support. If you're caught, we'll drop you as a deserter.
We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin and Indira Singh on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. Dan, you describe a couple of operations in your book, Expendable Elite, along the Bisac River and close to the Cambodian border, where you called for some artillery support, some fire support. How difficult was it to get support even close to the border on your side?
It was almost impossible because the Air Force especially. Now, we finally did get support from the Vietnamese Air Force. But our Air Force just claimed we were too close to the border that they might accidentally go across the border, and then if they did, they'd be court-martialed. For helping us to defend ourselves against an enemy that was four times our size attacking us, as I show in the book.
Even though everybody knew that the Viet Cong were based on the Cambodian side of the border.
Oh, they just didn't talk about it. You know, when General Harold K. Johnson, who was the chief of staff of the whole United States Army, came and visited our B team. I was there as an A team commander, and Colonel Brewer, who was our commander, B team, had the enemy sanctuaries in yellow on the other side of the border inside of Cambodia on the briefing map. General Johnson stood there and made him erase that yellow. He said, "The President of the United States has told the American people there are no enemy sanctuaries." So he had to erase them before he would let them continue the briefing. That's the stupidity that caused, I'd hate to think of how many deaths, not only on our side, but the Vietnamese. We were there to protect them. And out of the 2 million Vietnamese that were lost, I would imagine an awful lot of them were because we aided the enemy.
Now, Indira, where were you on September 1st of 2001? Or September 11th of 2001, I'm sorry.
September 11th, I lived and worked in lower Manhattan, actually about 700 yards from the World Trade Center. And in fact, I worked in risk and information technology as a consultant in two places, one for J.P. Morgan Chase and for a small organization down in D.C. That morning, there was a risk conference on the 106th floor of Tower 1, and fortunately, I was late for it. No one made it off that floor.
Amen.
So, thank you. And what happened was I was uncharacteristically late, and meaning that by 8:30 in the morning, I was not in place there. And when the first plane hit at 8:47, I, of course, felt it was happening around me. So I turned, I changed into my EMT clothes. I was a volunteer emergency medical technician in New York State.
God bless you.
Volunteer. Thank you. It was my way of giving back, and I used to ride with an ambulance, a volunteer of Volley Corps in Brooklyn. And from that point on, I was in EMT mode until I put on my suit 3 weeks later to go back to what was left of lower Manhattan. So I responded to the site and spent 5 days there until my lungs and basically organs began to give out.
Now, just as a little background before we get to the news at the bottom of the hour here, Indira, you say that you are a risk architect, enterprise risk analyst. What is that?
Yes. An enterprise architect creates global blueprints for large global organizations. Basically, we are the ones that merge the business vision, strategy, goals at the highest level with the lowest level of resources, processes, and technology that support the achieving of their goals. So we carry the big picture and the nitty-gritty little picture in our heads, and this, of course, is a very esoteric discipline. What I was doing is I was focused on risk. Basically, it just says that you don't measure the success and values of a corporation through the profits that they make, but also through the exposures that they have through how they make their profits.
And so it was all financial risk you're talking about.
Financial, legal, operational risk, credit risk. There are a galaxy of risks, as we say.
Very good.
But operational risks are basically the risk of anything going wrong with your business through its processes. And basically, in insurance parlance, 9/11 is known as an operational extreme risk event.
That's a kind of sanitized way of putting it.
Yes.
Your client, J.P. Morgan Chase, that is one of the biggest of the big boys, is it not?
Absolutely, and I worked at the very senior levels. I was a trusted senior consultant, and basically I was designing their next generation operational risk blueprint. And in fact, what I was doing was merging these galaxies of risk into one unified risk outlook for the bank so that we would be able to determine how the enterprise was exposed in any facet of its business at any point in time. So we really were looking at real-time risk pictures and quantifying that for the CXOs, the top levels of the organization, and our stakeholders.
We'll talk,
can I ask
we'll talk
a question?
More. We'll have to break there for just a moment.
Okay.
We'll take a look at some news, the final business check of the day.
Like a lift kit for your brain. This is Off-Road Friday on the Drive on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Tomorrow morning, we've got 3 hours devoted to your home, your health, and your money. Good Day Weekend with Doug Steffen. That's tomorrow morning between 5 and 8 on the Eagle 93.9 and Eagle939.com. I'm Derek Gilbert. We call this Off-Road Friday because we throw away the format map. Monday through Thursday, we talk about the usual politics, life, things happening here in mid-Missouri. Friday afternoons, we take a broader view. And with us today, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, the author of the book Expendable Elite. His website is expendableelite.com. And Indira Singh, Enterprise Risk Architect, and we were talking just before the break about your responsibilities, Indira, working for J.P. Morgan Chase. How did you, through your responsibilities there, come into contact with the software firm PTEC?
I was looking for a very special piece of software to roll out and design, be the center of the next generation of real-time risk management, according to my vision. I got paid to think outside of the box, and so a lot of what I developed was nothing that the average enterprise architect would be allowed to get involved with. I was funded out of a very special group, out of a lab. Actually, Lab Morgan, where we're paid to think, you know, the next generation stuff. And I was looking for very specialized software and talking with my industry colleagues, many of whom came from D.C., the defense industry, and so on. They had recommended PTEC. I was looking for people who were working with artificial intelligence and other similar facets of technology, and so I was the one who called PTEC and arranged to have a very controlled day-long session at J.P. Morgan Chase, and of course, all of this was vetted with a number of other, with the architectural board at J.P. Morgan and various others, and so we brought them in, and from the time they got there, things began to go wrong. Also, I should point out that I'm trained to think as an analyst, as a security analyst, as a risk analyst. I have that hat on all times. So I am looking to also screen them to see if they're the right people to bring on board for this. And from the time they got to that floor, the 46th floor of 60 Wall Street, I knew we had a problem. Remember, this is May 2002, about 10 days prior to April and May 2002, right before Ground Zero had closed. So Ground Zero was still a recovery operation at that point.
Hmm.
And it made it all the more poignant and all the more stressful, shall I say, finding out that I had invited Hussein Ibrahim, who was their chief scientist, and a group in to put PTEC software through their paces to make sure that they could handle the pieces of it that I needed to. Obviously, I can't go into detail now. But within a couple of hours, I had reason to call my colleagues and say, why did you recommend these people? There's a problem here, at which point they finally came out and said, watch them very closely. Don't let them anywhere from your site, and I said, this is a fine time to be telling me that.
Well, yeah, why did they recommend them?
Here's the deal. They recommended their software very highly as long as I didn't go to the core company, as long as I went through one of their distributors. And I said, I'm not going through their distributors. This is JP Morgan. We will deal with the company itself. We're not buying the software.
Amen.
You buy the software, you buy the company, basically. Not buy the company, but you have to buy into the company and what they stand for. So we went to the source. And then I insisted that they give me the reason why this was I should not let them out of my sight. And they said, well, there's a problem with one of their with their financing. And they did not want to give me that information. Eventually, by 2 hours later, I was told to call the Boston FBI and speak to an agent there. And at that point, I knew instantly it had to do with 9/11. And, of course, that was corroborated. So you could imagine, Ground Zero is not yet closed. I'm still going to, you know, all my colleagues' funerals and memorials. And I've got these people sitting across the room from me as very, very high-level financiers of Al-Qaeda.
That would be a very difficult meeting to make it through.
Yes.
I made it through it by saying that I don't have evidence, and it would be a bigger sin to indict these people if I don't have the evidence. And all I could say at that point is, you better be wrong or you better be right. There better be evidence for this, because heads are going to roll one way or the other if it's an incorrect determination.
We're talking with Indira Singh and Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. So, Indira, you're in this meeting. These guys at PTEC have been recommended to you by high-powered contacts in D.C. What kind of software did PTEC provide? What did they do? What make?
They put out the software was actually called PTEC itself, and it was in use. It was a proprietary software packages. It was a neural network-based enterprise modeling program. And in essence, it would allow me to blueprint an organization in real-time mode. It was eminently, it was very customizable, shall we say, to any situation. What was interesting about them is that it would hold every important functional, operational, and technical detail of whatever you wanted to model and monitor. And it was being used in this capacity, in various aspects of this capacity, all the way from nuclear process reengineering at Rocky Flats to the FAA. And it was their FAA connection that bothered me the most, not to mention their IRS, and their FBI connection, their connection with MITRE, with the post office, with Enron, with the U.S. Customs, with Treasury, with you name it, they were there, with the Department of Energy, of course, and with NAVAIR.
So let me see if I understand this. So this company, PTEC, had provided this software to a whole bunch of offices inside the United States government at the federal level. And yet the FBI in Boston was saying their financing is coming from a guy tied to Al-Qaeda.
Not just one person. That, you see, if it was just one person, I could say that, well, you know, they took money from the person they didn't realize was this bad. It wasn't just one person. And as a risk person, I'm trained to think as law enforcement. You look for the patterns. It wasn't just one person. It was on the head of the board of directors was Yakub Mirza, who was already the subject of Operation GreenQuest, a Treasury investigation into Al-Qaeda financing. And that was the Herndon, Virginia mess. Basically, and it wasn't just Yakub Mirza, it was also Yasin Qadi, who was known to be the banker for Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, he was extremely close with bin Laden, so much so that the Chicago FBI thought that at one point he and bin Laden were the same person, except that wasn't so. But there were also other founders and investors, such as Mohammed Alamoudi, and of course the whole Alamoudi family was being questioned one way or another regarding connections and funding to Al-Qaeda. Some of them went to jail for various other things. But there was also a connection to, these are people at the top, the funders, investors, the management themselves, but the most damning part of it was the subject of WBZ, which is a Boston IT investigative team. They were looking into one person in particular who was connected with something called CARE International, which was really just a front for funding for something called Maktab al-Khidmat. Maktab al-Khidmat was the funding arm for Osama bin Laden way back when in the late 1980s. And basically had it corroborated that Maktab was being run out of a PTAC front on September 11th. It was that.
Wow.
We're talking with Indira Singh and Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. Lieutenant Colonel Marvin was an A-team Green Beret captain in Vietnam, the first man authorized to carry the fight into the enemy sanctuaries offered by the U.S. government inside Cambodia. Indira Singh, an enterprise architect who discovered some very disturbing connections between Al-Qaeda financing and companies providing software to the highest levels of the United States government. How does this parallel? How does this connect? Our discussion continues as we continue down Off-Road Friday on The Drive. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
The ATV of talk shows. This is The Drive and Off-Road Friday on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Sunday night, you hear the man who revolutionized the news. I mean, even the New York Times has more readers to its online internet edition now than it does to its paper edition. Matt Drudge, The Drudge Report, Sunday night at 9, only on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. I'm Derek Gilbert, but not even Matt Drudge will touch the topic that we're tackling today, which is the United States government offering safe haven to its enemies, whether it be the Viet Cong in Vietnam or radical Islamists in the global war on terror. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin, U.S. Army Special Forces retired, and Indira Singh. Indira, when you raised, at what point did you raise a yellow flag in your dealings with PTAC? Who did you contact, and what did you try to do once you began to realize you were dealing with some possibly very dangerous people?
Well, first I contacted my management, who had a very, very trusting and close relationship with the entire chain of my management. I brought it to their attention, and immediately I knew I was in territory all by myself, because these are people who supported me through thick and thin and who knew what I could do, knew my integrity, and trusted me with the keys of the organization, basically. And they knew I wouldn't come to them with a story that I hadn't already found some corroboration, and found it very quickly, because that's what I was trained to do.
Very good.
And so I came to them. I basically flew down to Virginia, got the documentation I needed before I gave them the full analysis of it. But in so doing, you see, once I had proof of something, irrefutable proof of it, they could not pretend to me that it wasn't so. And at that point, I told the chief auditor, the general auditor of J.P. Morgan Chase, that 9/11 happened to us as a nation, not just to this PTAC situation was not just a vendor that you could order not to do business with J.P. Morgan, as he was planning on doing, and forget about the rest of it. I said, you see that hole in the ground out there? I lost people there. And he said, so did I. And I said, well, maybe, you know, for me, that was a line. These are civilians. It's a line that shouldn't be crossed. And he said, if you do anything more, you're out of here. I could not do anything. And this is why I think, you see, it was holding a line. I was a civilian, and to me, I knew at that point that I was risking my entire career and everything, but I would do it again in a heartbeat. Because
God bless you.
We have to do as a nation. Civilians often ask, what can we do? And basically, it's don't go out looking for trouble, but whatever crosses your desk or your path, hold that line of integrity, just as Lieutenant Colonel Marvin did when he wore a uniform. We also wear uniforms, and we're answerable, all of us, to our own souls, basically.
That's right.
Absolutely. Now, Dan, I'm going to talk a little more once we get past the news at the top of the hour about your dealings with CIA agent Walter McKim and the order you were given to assassinate Prince Sihanouk, or Rather, the request that was made of you to,
Right.
As you've informed me, Green Berets aren't ever ordered to do anything, just requested.
Well, anything that's illegal, is you're always asked if you want to do it.
Right. But Indira, so basically you were left alone. You were not given any support here by J.P. Morgan Chase.
No.
What conclusions did you draw at that point?
They told me that the FBI at the highest level would be handling it. And I said, don't you understand? PTAC is in with the FBI at the highest level. And I realized I was on my own. I've never felt more alone in my life. And of course, all of my colleagues immediately began falling away. And I really went through a period of intense, personal fire, should I say.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did was I was afraid for my life, of course, because I was I was being threatened overtly and covertly in many ways.
Yes.
And the joke was that I made was that if someone got me, we wouldn't know if it was CIA, FBI, corporate goons, or the mob, or the Arabs, or whoever.
Right.
And I said, well, this pretty much explains it. And I went to the press, and I went to Joe Bergantino of WBZ TV. And at first, he looked at me as though I was wearing a, as though I was nuts. And I finally gave him enough information. I have a lot of very good and very powerful friends in New York at that point, including FBI agents, A-team agents, who I knew and who could speak for my credibility and the fact that I wasn't a nutcase. And I had enough proof, of course, pictures, everything, and things that you wouldn't believe. I can't say on the air that it wasn't just the upper echelons of PTAC that were involved. The details that I had to do with 9/11 operatives as well passing through. So with such such overwhelming evidence, we were just asking that this be prosecuted, that a crime, in the end, a crime was committed in New York. 3,000
right.
civilians were murdered. We wanted this handled on that level, and please not have civilians try the case.
We're talking with Indira Singh and Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin. We need a break for news here. We will continue our conversation. Basically, we just set the stage now. What we've got is a software company being financed by men with connections to Al-Qaeda and the United States government refusing to investigate. Why? We'll talk about that after the top of the hour. And we'll talk further with Lieutenant Colonel Marvin about the parallels to his time in the service in Vietnam when the United States government provided safe haven to our enemies. What is going on? Why does this continue to happen? I'm Derek Gilbert. That's Off-Road Friday, and this is the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.